So I'd like to begin with Joanne Arnott.
No, I'm not saying anything. I was having a quiet moment. This is a poem for my, for a good friend, also a longtime woman poet of BC, now up in the Yukon. Okay.
I'm speaking into the mic.
Keep.
Oh, you got the teacher on you
now. No, it doesn't seem to be anywhere down here.
I forgot to mention Paul Nelson, founding director of Giving Voice to Poetry in Seattle, is recording this. If you don't want it recorded, please just say so.
Okay, can everybody hear in the back?
Okay. The poem is called Constance. When I was pregnant, she told me, reaching back more than 20 years for the memory, I put sunflower seeds on my belly. I used to read aloud to my son so he could hear our bones. I love our voices, she said. Chickadee and sparrow flutter down, lured by the seeds and undisturbed by our voices. I put your hand on my belly. I invite you to read this aloud. I want to listen to our bones and to love our voices for a little while. Thank you.
I'd like to welcome Michelle Barker.
I'm going to read a poem called Things That Won't Help You on a Bad Day. You can't count on your wrists when your life falls apart. They are the first things to break in tough times. All that leaning and pushing, the relentless hand-wringing, no, your wrists are the fragile birds of your body. You must simply let them go. Of equal ineffectiveness are the sheets you have folded and stacked onto closet shelves. Do not turn to them for comfort. Their scent will only bring to mind the sky, empty wide hole above your head offering rain. Rule out the sky as well. Even on a good day, it does not tell the truth about the world and your place in it. The loon calling across the darkened lake will only draw you to the edge of lament, its sad cold waters lapping at your toes. On a bad day, think about paperclips or the moon. Things that surprise you with their usefulness and influence. Consider the ingenuity of mice and how they will find their way into a warm house on a winter day through the most impossibly small space. Thank you.
I welcome Yvonne Blommer.
Thank you for this book, it's beautiful. The poem I'm going to read is called Have You Been Hunting? And it was inspired by a Jan Boigel the Younger painting called Christ in the House of Martha and Mary. And I'll just explain a couple of symbols that are in the painting and the poem. Monkeys in those paintings in those days represent the devil a little bit. And peacocks often represent Christ because their flesh rots slowly. Nice, hey? Have you been hunting? In dream, in life, Christ came the monkey on a string. Inhibitions held in check, or the devil's slow ascent to sky, to tree branch too high. Lazarus, a kind of deal with nature, this one's life for those 12, apostasies born on wing and feather. Christ, there are 12 birds at your unwashed feet. There, in the shadow of your long, glowing face, each much finer than any one over the other. A great spotted woodpecker, one magpie, but why? Two red-breasted warblers, two sparrows separated by yellow-bellied, by gold-chested, something blue, something used, something dead and die, and in beauty lie at you like new. Oh, those women, how they want you. Look at the tremor of breast, their long, longing eyes. Oh, how you fulfill all the expectations of time, puncture the lives that would have thrilled those eyes. Have you been hunting, Lord, of earth, of sea and sky? Why feast and feed on that which could lift you, eye as breath to soul, up beyond what seems whole, divine? Have you been hunting, Lord? In the shadow of the door, find plumage of peacock's tail. Peacock being pecked and picked for your feast, flesh likened to your flesh. How will you now decorate the skies with opulent feathers, some fine skull hollow in beauty as beauty in life? Thank you.
I welcome Fran Barassa.
Excuse me. I got nervous sitting there. I'm so thrilled to be in this book. And to see this poem in the company of such other great people in it. I'm reading a poem that is about me and my mom. As one. She died at 32. She was an addict. And my father, when he was angry with me, which is quite often, used to tell me that I reminded him of her. So this is our poem. And I set it in the East Side, Vancouver East Side. East Side Diary. I wander the seashore far into the night, save beach glass and the men I pick up in waterfront bars. And if they ask about my past, I tell them I'm a virgin. I say I come from a holy place. But I don't tell them all I remember is being cold and the crucifix on the wall, a dog yelping. I don't tell them I remember my arms hanging down my side, stiff as my dolly, a row of buttons being unbuttoned. Or that I remember growing up feeling like a fence post ground into the ground and that no one came to get me. Or say they were sorry. Or how me and my family lived in a pinball machine and how my mother was a saint, died giving me birth, and how it makes me feel bad because I can't help but think better her than me. And how I never saw my whole father, just relics, a cold cup of coffee, a stiff shirt on a hanger, his belt up close, a dark shadow in a doorway. I tell them, though, why I like tying them tight. Because in my confessions, my father has no arms, and that's why he never held me. And besides, I'm not the only one. Jesus was a sadomasochist, too. Knew all along he would die. Knew all along they would snap his wrists and ankles like celery. So I keep the money I find in strangers' pockets, and I work on Sundays instead of going to church. Me and Judas spending it all on red striped candy, 3 for a penny, black balls staining our clean white teeth, see who can hold out the longest in that sucking and holding back, try to kill the urge to bite down on the tiny pink heart. I don't tell them. I keep a knife in my purse next to my purple lipstick. And violence is the color of my walls, and that when drums pound in my head, I put on my black leather skin, grind cigarette butts into the ground with the toe of my high heels. And I know there are words that change the world, but none that belong to me tonight. Fuck off. Fuck you. Fuck them all. And I'd like to blame someone for that too, for the voices that place the bad words in my mouth, the way sharp things end up innocently in your hands. So I wander by the seashore far into the night, me and the wind, picking up the lonely with their leftover desires, wander by the dark water where I dump the carcasses of deserted dreams. And even when I finally fall asleep, I drift back on the red tide that returns everything you want to forget, waves that turn up the bodies of my parents, the front door of my house, wooden spoons, letters I wrote asking for forgiveness unopened.
I'd like to welcome Connie Brown.
I'm reading my name. In 1818, my name migrated from Prussia to Russia in pursuit of farmland, planted watermelon, corn, and potatoes for a century, though hardly enough to live on. Until the promised land was expropriated, collectivized, my name marked, enemy of the people, placed on a list, forced to hide in birch forests from black ravens at night, filling their quotas for labor camps. War erupted, front lines sliced through the villages. As the snow fell, my name fled for its life in an open box car, strewn with lice-infested straw. In 1948, my name was written down. In a Bible handed out to refugees, it is there, on the page of births and deaths, a survivor. Before I was born, when the papers for immigration were signed, the last letter, an N, was dropped, like a stone, into the ocean. Did my name look less foreign on that converted troop ship, a transport still smelling of fresh paint, sailing to Canada, where my name settled, in an unheated garage, for a few dollars a day worked in the hop yard, enough to start over? Of that missing consonant, my father said pragmatically, only one was necessary. Or was it one less heaviness for him to carry?
I welcome Judith Cockathorn.
Rapidly than I expected it would.
So I was saying to Mona, so what have we got? 2 minutes each? And she said that was about right. So 2 minutes times 30, that means there's time for us to walk back and forward as well. But this is not a narrative poem nor an expository poem. It's not, except that it's actually a collage of several expository poems or haikus or whatever, short pieces that have their own little stories and they're woven together, which is mainly what I do because the visual also really interests me in the format from the visual. So that's what I started with, and it seems to be I'm still there. And so this is called At the Midnight Coffee House, and that's because at midnight, if you're my age, you're probably in bed, and you're dreaming, and you're dreaming about a party at the Midnight Coffee House, where we're all photocopying poems and giving them to people, and the lights are flashing, and sometimes it turns into a nightmare, but or we become aware of the nightmares. But mostly, it's a wonderful place. At the Midnight Coffee House, can you hear me all? Is that okay? Okay. Immersed in time, as all activities are measured in and by it, and is narrative an inborn part of our perceptions? And time is short unless pain is too great. What's poetry? Who wants it? Boundaries, massifs, names, barriers, reefs, concrete, lyric, language, conceptual, oral, organic, stylish, formal, political, satiric, passionate, syllogistic, conversational. So we publish. Grow, ingrow, shrivel, switch. The best poem is the one I'm going to write next. Always hopeful, we are dogs outside the bakery, waiting for what luck will drop before us. Elysium, cecium, seaweed, alkalis, and you, Harper, go green. Don't tell me you still don't understand the dangers of radiation and violent greed. Still think we won't make mistakes? Still believe you are master of the universe? Wait for Ottawa's and Calgary's quakes. Some of Canada's biggest disasters so far are as its elections. An arrant rant. And then came the nymphs. A naiad, a dryad, an Ariadne. Owls or larks? Dragonflies or water birds? Art most foulish. A nexus of vipers, vituperative. Where are the hearts of our politically enterprising cannibals?
I welcome Susan Cormer. Thank you so much for allowing me to be amongst you in this volume. I really feel, looking around at all these people that I've followed your work for years, and I studied you in university, and I feel like that, you know, that one really dorky, really short kid that gets invited along to tag along with the cool kids? And I'm sitting on the cool bus, right between Judith Copthorne and Lorna Crochet. This is awesome, dude. Haiku for him. Don't let me catch you driving with both hands in your lap and your eyes half closed. I like boys who breathe fire, men who swallow suns. I need you to see me. I like boys who breathe fire, men who swallow sunlight. I know you explode. You make such pretty pictures. Picture me now. I need you to see me. You make such pretty pictures, picture me now. I know you explode. All that you gave me was loneliness, and I can get that anywhere. All that you gave me was loneliness, and I can get that anywhere. Send me a tall man in a long black coat who holds my hand, walks me home. Send me a tall man in a long black coat to hold my hand. Walk me home. Don't let me catch you driving with both hands in your lap and your eyes half closed. Thank you.
I welcome Jen Curran.
Thank you, women. This is Under the Midnight Tree. The unthinkable happens. And then what? Then what do you think? If the monks meant it, at our hospice, we will meditate. Consciousness has become big business, and our expectations were unreasonably high. A small moment on Starboard Road. You kissed my forehead, and I saw things differently. What should I say to her now? She is just a stranger. The music is painful, intentional. We get angry and try to reject the photographer. She killed a morning with her shattered glass, her essay smelling of cigarettes. We didn't know how impatient it all could be. Sleeping in the cold, making fiction with our eyes. Everything in place as we are moved.